You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to System Check, the only weekly AEW analytics show. I am Ryan Knightsey, your host, and with me today on this special sort of like year in review, sort of like analyzing stats of whatever of the year on this special Christmas week episode of System Check is none other than my favorite guest, Craig from Pro Wrestling Musings. Craig, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. Favorite guest? Only guest?
Craig, you got the award. I'll take the award away if you don't want it.
Such a prestigious award as well.
Hey, well, Chris Samsa hasn't gotten on here yet, so that's that. You're in the running so far.
Oh, he's probably too important these days.
Oh yeah, he's hanging out with Kevin Kelly out in the Tokyo Dome and. Anyways, already tangents aside. Yeah, thank you everybody for joining us on this episode of System Check. Like I said, it's a little bit of a year in review about AEW. Of course, there's no episode Christmas Day episode coming out, or even I guess no is the next week. Yeah, next week is January 1st, so there's no Christmas week episode. They're coming back next week, so we wanted to take this time to sort of talk about, look over how AEW has been the past year, since it's pretty much almost been a full year for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go on Twitter, you will discover that AEW is both amazing and the worst thing to have ever existed.
That just describes all wrestling at the moment, it feels.
It's all of Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, man. the Twitter wars are igniting across the board. But we wanted to focus again. We're not going to focus on NXT. We're not going to focus on New Japan. We're focusing on AEW today. So let's, Craig, before we start off, let's get into it. Let's talk about some of the highlights, I guess, of All Elite Wrestling in their past year. So I'll throw it over to you first. What has been, for you personally, what has been some of the highlights coming out of All Elite Wrestling?
Cody Rhodes versus Chris Jericho was incredible. The feuds from start to finish, really. The Cody promo was incredible. The what would you call it? The skybox, the VIP box with the punching through the glass with MJF scarf. Was a great moment. And then Jericho's really sarcastic video package where he just mocked Cody repeatedly and compared Cody's really emotional, nice video and just turned it into his quest to find the best bubbly available. Yeah, that was my favorite in the match. The match was just an emotional roller coaster. With that finish.
If I can expand on that, like one of the highlights for me has just point to one person, Chris Jericho.
Yes,
he's been a highlight of this promotion. What I wrote down was his quest to elevate stars, whether it be through Darby Allin, Scorpio Sky, Jungle Boy. He is using his cachet to help bring up everyone else and elevate everyone else. Having an amazing storyline build, whatever you want to call it, with Cody. Having a pretty decent, I guess, build as much as it could have been with Hangman Adam Page. I think he played his part in it. a great sort of rivalry of Kenny Omega with a little bit there. And the things he's been lately doing with Moxley. I greatly enjoyed the Moxley Jericho promo where Jericho just sort of treated him like a wild animal.
And then the list.
Sorry, not the list.
Yes, of course, the lexicon. The lexicon, of course, meaning Greek for list of names. Excalibur.
Yeah, I think Jericho has just had an amazing pivotal.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. He's been brilliant. It was interesting. I think it was Michael Sidgwick, who does What Culture, was saying that Chris Jericho is getting towards being too good to be the big heel. Like, he's just too good on the mic. He's too amusing. He's too clever. He's kind of beginning to toe the line between, you know, just being cheered because he's entertaining.
Interesting. I never thought of that. But at the same time, he still gets boos. But you are right. Mm-hmm. He's doing a lot of great stuff that... Interesting. Okay. I never thought about that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's relatively a positive. You know, like being able to be, it's not go away heat. It's we recognize what you're doing is amazing. Yes. So part of us are going to cheer, but also part of us are going to play into what you're doing.
That's often what happens with heels. When they're good, they end up getting cheered and have to turn almost.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of like what AEW has also done kind of best is, I would say, when they do play in that space. I mean, one example I can pull from is like Lucha Brothers, right? Mm-hmm. They've been playing more heel, but they're definitely playing within the space of like, well, they're getting cheered and booed, so we'll just, you know, throw it up to the audience to decide whether to cheer or boo them.
Yeah, which is good. Sports, I suppose.
Yeah, that's one of my other highlights for AEW is allowing really just like it feels like to, I don't want to say the fans decide, but really like allowing just it, like there's no hard and fast heel face, you know, and in other companies it's like you turn heel, you only do bad things now. Yeah. You team up with the bad guys.
Yeah, Paige is a really good example for that this week.
Oh yeah, it is a great example. Even when you start doing some bad things, your outlook has changed. You have, you know, these other relationships that you've fought over. It's like, you know, if Paige turned heel, it's like, what, now he's going to team with Chris Jericho? That'd be bonkers.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's one thing that I really liked. Any other highlights for you, Craig?
What else did I have? The obvious one is Jon Moxley. He's been unleashed. You keep seeing people talking about him being unleashed, and he really has. He's been. He gives the impression that a lot of the stuff he's doing comes from him. It's very much his character. The crowd go bananas when he comes out of the crowd in the old kind of Shield manner, which I don't really feel like gets pointed out that much. He's kind of doing the Shield entrance. It's just not something I've ever seen pointed out. He looks threatening. He looks a big deal. He's got Jericho running away from him. He's been very, very entertaining. I also really like the tag tournament. I think that's maybe the most sports-based thing they've done. Just more of those things.
Yeah, one of my other highlights, I guess, is maybe more of the initial push, I guess you could say, but that push to be more sports-centric. Yes. Focus on rankings and records, however big or small that focus may be. Big moment on these tournaments. I hope they can do more tournaments in the future.
Yes, more tournaments is good.
I would love one thing they could do easily is a women's tournament, honestly.
Yeah, I don't understand why they, like, Riho's been off TV for ages. Why not do that now?
I think that would be, maybe it was too soon after the tag team tournament, but if you're coming in the new year and you Well, I guess after the Chris Statlander, since she is the now official number one contender, I think do a tournament. I think a tournament might be the right time.
Yeah, people like tournaments.
Yeah, but that initial push definitely to be more sports centric and focus on less goofiness and all these things. And I guess on that goofiness note, let's start talking a little bit about our lowlights of AEW the past year. Craig, I'll throw it to you first. I'll throw it to you on this one first. I feel like you have a couple.
I have a really big issue with, I don't know, I think it's maybe expectations, but when you're saying we're sports centric and, you know, your adverts on TV says a new wrestling league, I'm interested to see what a wrestling league actually is, because living in Britain and being very into football, a league is when you go up and down a league and there's a set point where it ends and then the winner gets something. You know, Hikaru Shida was number one contender a couple of weeks ago by getting to the top of the rankings. Didn't get anything for it. When she was number one contender, they scheduled a match for Baker versus Statlander for a number one contendership. It's just, I don't know, I'm finding it a bit convoluted, and sports isn't supposed to be convoluted. There are clear rules and clear markers, and I don't know, fixtures. I suppose I'm now thinking Japanese NJPW. There, it's very clear, it's set out. And that's my major thing. I get a bit frustrated with that because I'm hoping it's going to improve.
I mean, 100% agree with you, honestly. I think why the reason I put that note about the initial push is that it feels like that push had sort of fizzled out a little bit at the end.
Like the tag tournament felt very sports. That's how sports work. Knockout tournament.
It felt like almost, one could argue it felt like the height of their sports-centric journey. And it's sort of been maybe dribbling out a little bit after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
There is this weird thing about how they want it to be a league. They want it to be presented as sports oriented. However, you know, like you said, Hikaru Shida is number one a couple weeks ago, and then now she's no longer number one. All of a sudden she loses. She's out. I mean, I think part of that is that to play devil's advocate, I think part of that is, you know, they're still throwing in new roster members.
Yeah, and I heard rumors about they signed Statlander by giving her assurances that she was going to be, you know, pushed, and they convinced her to sign by saying they wanted her to be a centerpiece of their women's division in that. So you're probably right. It's probably a lot to do with that.
But even in the kayfabe of it, we don't know, I guess, because Chris Statlander, to be the example, we don't know how good Chris Statlander is.
Don't get me wrong. She looks good. She looks very good.
Oh, yeah. What I'm trying to say is that, like, we don't know how great of a wrestler she is. So when she's new and she starts climbing the rankings, it's like, it seems weird because Hikaru Shida's like, that should be number one. But then, you know, she gets a win over Shida, and then it's like, okay, what? Okay. Yeah.
My issue with it is that I didn't really feel like she had climbed the rankings. Like when she was second before she beat Baker? Like, she'd only won one match.
So looking at it now, she was second when she beat Baker. Baker was number one, even though Baker hasn't wrestled in weeks. Baker is 4-2. Chris was 2-0.
And Baker jumped. I'm being very negative, sorry.
We're in the low light section. Don't worry.
It seems to be stretching for quite some time. Baker seemed to jump Shida for no apparent reason. They had very similar statistics, and Shida had a win over Baker, and Baker jumped Shida.
Despite not wrestling,
for no other reason than they wanted her to face Statlander. That's convoluted, whisper it quietly, but WWE kind of pulling things around.
How dare you, sir?
Well, that's maybe an exaggeration. There is no authority figure just deciding for the sake of it. But
but to go back to it, remember the last time you and I talked about this was around like the first time the rankings came out, and we all of a sudden Emi Sakura is like number one.
Oh yeah, yeah,
that back wasn't in the good old days.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, I don't understand why they can't say. In 4 weeks' time, whoever's top will be the number one contender. And there's like a, I don't know, like a King of the Mountain type scramble to be top of the mountain come that week. And like stuff like that is easy.
Hold on. I'm just going to take a quick pause real quickly. So we just said that, that we felt that like the height of the initial sports push mm-hmm. was around that tournament, right?
Yeah.
Around that tournament, we bring you on the system check. We sort of talk about it. But also that happened to be the first week or whatever, first or second week of the rankings, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And then we said after the tournament, it started dribble down, which happened to be... I don't want to say there's a correlation, but do you think that like since announcing the rankings, like that might have been... an issue about why we felt that like the sportsiness has gone down. Like we're looking at like Emi Sakura is number one. That's weird. Or Hikaru Shida is number one. And now all of a sudden Britt Baker's despite not wrestling, she's number one. Like, do you think it's like publishing those rankings actually have hurt AEW in terms of that sports centric outlook?
Maybe. I don't think it's a bold pitch.
I understand.
I don't think it should have. I don't think they're too difficult to manage. It's like when WWE came out with their SmackDown 10, whatever that was, a couple of years ago.
Top 10 or whatever.
Yeah, and it was just like the reasons why people were in certain positions weren't very clear. They didn't make a huge amount of sense. Mm-hmm. And it's like AEW've done that, but they're trying harder to justify it.
Yeah, and even then their justifications are like, that doesn't make any sense. I could maybe follow the logic, but you know, and I think they gave themselves that out when, you know, Cody and all these interviews are stating that the rankings are put together by like, you know, like college football.
Yes, yes.
They gave themselves an out where just people are deciding that this is who is ranked.
But for me, and I don't know if it's just my own OCD about these things, but that's not really how sports work when it's like the top division you have to win.
Yeah, and even then in college football, these are teams that have been around for decades, right? These are teams that have...
So I don't know about college football, but I would guess all those things are based off results.
Yeah, seemingly. People vote like, oh, well, this person... I mean, it's all still a little bit subjective. Based on how I understand it, college football standings are tallied through like voting system or whatever, emails or whatever sent out to specific media people. Those people vote on who they believe is ranked where, average out those numbers, wherever, and there we go.
Okay.
To my understanding. But even then, it's like, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's just, that's the whole thing, is that like maybe it's a mixture of expectations, what we were looking at individually or what the wrestling universe, the fandom was looking at on the scale. Our expectations all seem to have been different than what AEW has been putting out in terms of that sports ranking system.
Yeah. For me, there's kind of AEW pre Full Gear and AEW post Full Gear. I would say that before Full Gear, it was a great show. It was really good. It was really engaging. Things more or less made sense to a point. I think the kind of post Full Gear, it's been very, I don't know, strung out. It's not made a huge amount of sense. Things haven't really grabbed the fans in the same kind of way. I think they're struggling, and maybe it's because they haven't had things to aim for, or their plans are too long term, or they're not, maybe teething problems.
Yeah, I mean, and at the same time, like you said, kind of all of these things have been centered around the end of the honeymoon period, it feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And that's a great point. Talking about long-term booking, there was definitely an idea that I've had expectations going into it, where it was like, it's going to be kind of like New Japan, where there's going to have very long...
I think that's perhaps an issue, yeah.
Very long, drawn-out sort of stories. And the problem is that New Japan doesn't have weekly TV
mm-hmm.
that are able to do these longer stories.
Definitely. Yeah,
Where I think WWE can have long stories, but it only feels like a couple months because, after a couple weeks of seeing them fight about the similar things.
Yeah.
It only goes so far.
Yeah. It's difficult. I also think NXT is doing a far, far better job of what... It's almost as if AEW is like, we are going to be this sports-centric approach, we're going to treat you like adults, we're going to treat you like you're intelligent. And then NXT, there's a line that they use that's like they call themselves the real alternative, and they got like slated for it, so that's you putting down Raw and SmackDown, that's your own product, blah blah blah. But then I don't know, for me that's rung true. The NXT show this year felt to me far more like a competitive sports based thing than this week's AEW did.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's the common issue that it feels like everyone in the fandom has been feeling, or world. I should stop saying fandom. That seems very like brandy. I don't know if I like that, but just in the world, the people watching AEW, it feels like a lot of it's just like, to quote the great demigod that is Dave Meltzer, a little inside joke, NXT has become what AEW want it to be to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I do agree with that to a certain extent. NXT has felt to be more in-ring centric. We're telling the stories in the matches. And when someone gets pushed, you feel the push happening. Where here, it's like they're still establishing, they're still getting their footing. And I think the honeymoon phase has run up where maybe they're still trying to establish and get their footing. I mean, we can talk about the women's division all they want, but it's been clear that the person that ran the women's division had changed during this whole process. It's clear that, I would argue, the loss of people like Kylie Rae, who is probably going to be a cornerstone in the division, that probably threw them for a loop.
Yeah, I do.
Which is another low light. The loss of Kylie Rae, greatly missed.
Yes. And no, I do wonder if she was going to get Riho's spot.
That's fair.
I don't know. That's something. It's interesting that you were talking about the way that NXT are putting on matches. NXT also put on somewhat long, competitive matches. I was really disappointed at the end of this week's AEW, because like I've absolutely loved the Dark Order videos, but when the Young Bucks versus SCU, I was going to say cut short, but it wasn't cut short because that's what they planned, but I was really excited for that match, and then it was just over, and it was quite short, and I didn't feel like they got into it, and they cut short the Young Bucks versus SCU for the tag titles for the Dark Order. And I don't know if that's not what I want. I want to see the really, really good matches that they've built up to, rather than angles at the end of shows.
Do we have a timetable on that number? I'm trying to see how long SDU Young Bucks match is.
It was, I've got it written down here somewhere. Young Bucks versus SCU was 10 minutes and 50 seconds, which is not very long.
10 minute match for a title match.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
For comparison, Balor versus Cole was 15 minutes and 16 seconds.
A lot can happen in 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I think 15 minutes for the main event of a television show is good. You could argue that Young Bucks versus SCU for the titles and Young Bucks' first title shot could go 20 minutes, never mind 10.
Mm-hmm. I'm the more I think about all these things with AEW, maybe we should move on to another segment, but I want to stay here just a little bit longer.
Negative.
Negative Nancy's over here. That's what we're going to get called out for on Twitter. It's just, there's also this thing, there's a couple of things, right? There's a bunch of scenarios are happening in play all the time. Mm-hmm. But there's this other angle of it being like, well, AEW... In terms of their quality of matches, I would argue are consistently good to great. I think mm-hmm. most of the matches in AEW have been phenomenal. And the work rate, I should be acknowledging, has been great. Uh-huh. But when you get too much great, it starts becoming good. And then it starts dropping down a little bit because we start getting used to, like, this is what it is.
They have all been very short.
Exactly. And I was also about to say that, like, you know, I think maybe I like them doing multiple rivalries at once with some of the top stars.
Cool. Yeah.
That's definitely a highlight. But I think a low light negativity that does that is we don't get to maybe focus and fall into a rivalry fully because 1 week we're feuding with MJF, the next week we're feuding with Butcher and the Blade.
Yes.
Next week we'll be Darby.
I do wonder if I think they will, as they get closer to Revolution, I think it'll probably become more focused again.
Which I agree. I think that's mm-hmm. those extra storylines and stuff are a way to get us through all these things.
Yeah.
And to be fair, we've had years of WWE television telling us, like, this is how it should be done. And, you know, I would say New Japan.
AEW should really do is start having more title match signings. That'd really pick up the program. Yeah. And then sort of they could get powerbombed through the table.
That's what I'm saying. Now we're talking.
Yeah, that's like, it. No, that's the solution.
We need more gimmick. We need Revolution needs to be all Texas death matches. Chris Statlander versus Awesome Kong with a knife on the pole match where first person gets it and cut off the other person's hair.
Good.
It writes itself. It writes itself, honestly. But you know, we still enjoy.
And when you're saying about like all the mixed up storylines, I mean, it does make sense when the Dark Order attacking people in the ring, like all their pals start running down to help them out. In WWE, those people are too busy, you know, drinking coffee or whatever backstage, just so that the baby faces can get beat down.
Yeah, I was talking to my girlfriend when we were watching that moment with Dark mm-hmm. Order beating down Young Bucks and SCU and whoever else at the end, which you were just like, you know. Storyline wise, booking wise, legitimately, it kind of makes sense, right? Uh-huh. Like it makes sense. You know, we've been building up these guys for however many weeks. They're also a tag team. Let's have them big debut, attack, mm-hmm. you know, Young Bucks, to attack SCU, and just acknowledge people. And we're like, but the crowd wasn't into it. It lasted way too long.
Yeah. I just wanted to see the match. Just wanted to see the wrestling match.
Exactly. I think if it was like, if they did that to Young Bucks, if they maybe just did that to the Young Bucks after the death match, maybe that would have been good, and then go into this match.
To be fair, it did give us another one of Kenny Omega's amazing running down the ramp knees.
That camera guy just barely got it.
Oh, he absolutely killed that creeper.
Just camera guy's like, oh, running. Oh my god. But yeah, well, let's move on. We can do a whole podcast about some lowlights about AEW. It's too easy to focus on the negative. So let's focus on something else. What are some surprising moments? These aren't necessarily high or lows, but just real quickly, what are some surprising moments from the past year? You know, things you didn't expect to see happen. For me personally, 100% did not expect to see Jungle Boy just winless.
Totally winless.
0-8-1 is his overall record. You know, someone that was pushed in terms of marketing and showing off to different people about, like, oh, this is who we are, and a guy who was there when the AEW World Title Belt was shown off. Same thing with Jimmy Havoc. Whatever happened to that guy?
Oh yeah, he was there too. He's gone the same way.
Yeah, it's just like, whatever, you know, what's happening with these guys? You know, I don't know. It just feels like that was a big surprise. I guess sort of maybe I'm still focusing on the negative, but that was a surprising thing. I was expecting Jungle Boy to be this low, personally. Craig, what about you?
Cody losing, Cody doing that stipulation was out of the blue. That was huge. Now not being allowed to challenge for allegedly forevermore. That was on, you know, when he picked up that microphone, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, I it was such a big chip to throw down, and you know, then losing the match, you know.
Really, absolutely.
Was a big surprise. It really massive. Cemented Jericho as well as AEW champion, I feel like.
Yeah, it did, and it's also such a rich storytelling tool now. I don't think many people believe it's actually going to happen, that he's never going to challenge again.
I do think that's like partly the WWE methodology about going back on those things all the time.
True, yeah, very
and also
true.
We talked about the issues about the rate of storytelling having weekly TV versus, you know, bi-weekly sort of New Japan style is like, it might come up faster. But no, I think though, I say stick to it. There's no reason. It takes away. There's no reason to do it because it takes away the idea. It takes away one big person to knock off Jericho. What I'm trying to say is that, like, the possibilities that it could be Darby or someone else, like Pac or whatever, are bigger because the one big fish is out of the pond completely.
But what about 2 years' time when it's MJF as champion?
Oh, I 100%. If MJF becomes AEW champion, I 100% believe that the storyline will be, I want to challenge Cody. I don't give a crap about what he thinks because he's an idiot. I'm better than him.
I think that's the other possibility.
Yeah, but then MJF taking off of Jericho, that feels weird. There's got to be, we got time.
Well, I'm thinking longer. I think there's two or three perhaps in there before.
Mm-hmm. Other surprises for you? One for me is, honestly, the surprise of Butcher and the Blade showing up. Did not expect it. I liked it. I'm a big fan of their independent wrestling, a big fan of who they are as a tag team. And seeing them was a big, big pop for old Ryan over here.
I didn't know them at all.
Here's a question for you, Craig. And it's a question I ask my co-host on Hit the Books frequently when we started out, was how much independent wrestling do you follow? What sort of wrestling do you follow, Craig?
My favorite's New Japan. That's never lets you down. NXT. So it's New Japan, NXT.
New Japan, always there to help you.
NXT, AEW, and I've just gotten really into NWA over the last few weeks. I kind of watch Impact, like YouTube highlights, but that's really about it.
Man, next time, Nick, this is what we got to do, Craig. You got to come over down to Atlanta. We'll go to the next, not the January tapings. We'll go in like February, March, whenever they do the next one. Come down to Atlanta. We'll house you. We'll go to the pay-per-views and all the tapings.
Only if Aaron Stevens is there.
Aaron Stevens and his pale tan looking son.
Yes, it's an odd look. It's a very odd look.
I don't know what. What was the idea? I mean, that's such a. I don't know. It's such heel heat for me personally.
He's amazing though. Like he was hiding behind a Christmas tree like a child, and it was hilarious. It was fantastic.
Oh my god! Oh my god! I love NWA. Anyways, AEW. other big surprises? Any other surprises? I know we kind of covered a little bit of the bases, but any big surprises you can think of?
I had one and I've forgotten it. That's good. Good radio. What was it? That's really bad. Dark has been really, really good. I've actually really liked Dark. They tend to have one really good match every week. Perhaps better than the kind of stuff they've been putting on the actual Dynamite.
Yeah, if you want some really solid, you know, wrestling, you know, what is nice about Dark is that it's sort of semi storyline free.
Yeah.
So if you just want to watch some wrestling, put on some
absolutely.
Dark. Skip over the commercials and just watch 30 minutes of wrestling.
Yeah, there's a bit of highlights for Dynamite, but apart from that, it's really good.
Yeah, that's a 100% agree. Well, let's keep moving along. Let's what else we got to talk about on this show? So we're talking about some of the year in review, and obviously this show is partly or mainly, I guess, an analytics numbers stat show. But what are some of the stories that the numbers have been telling us, in your opinion, Craig?
The biggest kind of gaps when you actually put the numbers together and compile it like a league, I suppose one could call it a wrestling league, is that SCU are running away with the tag division.
I was taking a sip of water. No. I was splurted it out my nose. Oh my god. Anyways, you were saying.
So I do a plus one, minus one system. Plus one for a win, minus one for a loss. So if you win two matches, lose two matches, you have zero. So SCU, 9 matches, 7 wins, 2 losses. So they're on plus 5. There are 5 tag teams behind them, all on plus 1. So they're being booked as the kind of kings of the tag team division at the moment.
Same thing with me. I was, you know, I'm doing the Ocelot ranking system. Mm-hmm. Same sort of situation is that what Ocelot shows greatly is the booking style, or you can see who's getting pushed. SCU, they're just dominating, 60 points higher than the second place team. Riho, okay. 40 points higher than second place. Jericho,
yeah,
20.
She's been out there for a while, Riho.
And should be said, listeners at home, if you want to follow what Craig's been doing, then go to prowrestlingsmusings.com. He has all those stats and records that he's been following posted there. So definitely recommend checking it out. Quick little plug.
What's interesting about Riho is she was like, I think this is part of my issue with the women's division. She was like SCU. She was way out ahead. But she's not wrestled a match since Full Gear, and she's still comfortably ahead. They don't outwith their champions. They haven't really built up anyone in a sustained way, except for Jon Moxley.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would think that, let's just say, completely, this isn't based on anything, but like. You know, Riho, someone to go up and be able to seem like a credible challenger, someone needs to get a lot of back-to-back wins. And maybe that person is Chris Statlander, but then even then, she's brand new. So it's like,
yeah, they're hot-shotting.
And also brand new in the sense that she had 2 losses before she went on this 3-match streak.
I think it's just 2. Sorry to correct, but I think it's just 2.
I'll inverse correct. Wasn't it Hikaru Shida, B. Priestley, and now Britt Baker?
Oh yeah. Oh dear. Oops.
Oh no. All
right. My stats definitely are not wrong.
And if you want to check out not wrong stats, go to prowrestlingmusings.com for all that.
You're
all your
not wrong anymore.
Yeah, but you know, hot shotting, great way to put that sort of spin on it. It definitely does that. But like, yeah, like you said, Riho is someone that is so far ahead. You know,
yes.
We're still. No one in the women's division feels like a real credible challenger, whereas John Moxley feels like a credible challenger right now. He's been getting these wins over Spears, Janela, Alex Reynolds, I guess, Omega, getting these wins. Despite a lot of those wins being unsanctioned, wins still have...
Yeah, I've just been counting the unsanctioned stuff because it's like...
Me
it's
too.
Still,
it's hard not.
It's still a push. I don't like the unsanctioned thing.
Yeah, and you know, SCU, Young Bucks have felt like a little bit of credible people. You know, picking up a couple
yeah,
wins here.
They're quite high. Yeah,
Young Bucks, but also same like you said, a lot of people having plus one. The tag team division feels most feels like New Japan to me, in okay. the sense that. Everyone sort of feels, I'm going to steal this from one of my favorite shows, Super J-Cast, but everyone sort of feels like they're on the burner. They're all sort of like simmering on the burner. And every okay. once in a while, someone gets heated up.
Yes, yes.
And goes up.
Yeah.
And that's what the tag team division feels. The women's division, it feels like not many people are on the burner. We're just or no, simmering. We're just like throwing some people in real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And men's division, it's you know sort of you know it's a bigger division, harder to tell. But even then,
yeah, that's like more interesting because like they looked like they were heating up. Shawn Spears again. He was the graphic that they had up when he was coming out last week said that he'd won 4 singles matches in a row,
which was correct.
But he was coming out for a tag team match, which was odd.
Yep. And based on that tag match and a promo package, he's apparently
yeah.
looking to go into the tag
division. Yeah, which is confusing.
Yeah. So I don't know what's happening there or who his partner is going to eventually be. I feel like at this rate, it's probably Joey Janela, but that's my WWE brain.
It should just be Tully.
It should be Tessa.
It should be Tully. That what the brilliant story. So he should just keep losing and keep losing. They can't find the partner, so Tully does it, and then they win the tag team titles.
That would be great.
That's what they would do if it was WWE.
Who would be? So we're talking four horsemen. Who would be the Arn Anderson equivalent? Maybe not just in AEW, but maybe you know across the world and thinking. Who would be the person that could? Be the Arn Anderson of that maybe that four horsemen Shawn Spears stable.
Brody Lee? On top
Ooh. Or what about Harper though? What about Harper? That's a great idea. Brody Lee, I like that.
She's a bit kind of big.
He's
so he's big. Good analysis. He's... Big.
he is big. He's got a lot of that Southern style in him.
Mm.
He actually would be pretty good, and that would be a great way to introduce him. Also,
it's a bit WWE though.
What's that?
It's WWE. It's Harper. It's Harper and Dillinger.
Yeah, I was about to say. I was like, it feels like the Four Horsemen might just be like these are all the WWE yes. rejects. I can't wait for Sin Cara to show
no,
up.
No. What you do is you then put them with the Revival because they're very Four Horsemen.
Man, Craig, you say that, but like legitimately,
that's what WWE would do.
but that's actually a good idea, though.
That's
right?
An interesting dynamic, though. That's almost like NWO type stuff.
Yeah, you got Revival, Spears, and Brody Lee all backed yeah. by Tully Blanchard.
God, they should do that. That's great.
Like, I know it's a very WWE thing or WCW.
It would work though because they obviously wouldn't be like as dominant as NWO. It could be like a upper mid card stable that like beats up Joey Janela and might win the tag team titles. It doesn't need to be, you know, full Hollywood Hulk Hogan taking over the books.
Oh, you're telling me Sean Spears is going to be taking over AEW? No, get out of here. That nonsense. No, yes, yeah, that's, I mean, I don't want a fantasy book on this podcast. That's a different show, but holy crap. I mean, legitimately, I'm on board with that one.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Anyways, that's my surprising moment of the year.
Tangent.
Great idea. Yeah, we're full of tangents. That's fine. I like tangents. I like getting to know what our thoughts are. But yeah, so stories the numbers have been telling us. What are some of the key wrestlers? We talk about Jericho, talk about Cody. Mm-hmm. What are some of the key wrestlers, tag teams, women's wrestlers that you felt have sort of been the defining moments of these divisions?
Tessa Blanchard?
Ooh. of AEW,
Sideball. Well...
Are you suggesting that we introduce in this Four Horsemen stable, introduce Tessa Blanchard as well?
A literal Blanchard. Surely she has to be number one or number two on if you could bring in anybody to that company to sort out a few of the problems.
Mm-hmm. It does feel like we're missing a female Jericho or female, yes, Cody, female Young Bucks, female something, like a bit. What I'm trying to say is a female star.
Mm-hmm. I think they want it to be Statlander.
I would agree.
Blanchard would be a guarantee.
You could build one, but mm-hmm. there's only one diamond in the rough, right?
Well, she's you know, potential megastar type person, and there aren't that many of them around.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
but in terms of the actual company, the kind of key player in that company is it's the guy that you've already spoken about. It's Chris Jericho. Like you said, he's elevated things. He's, you know, like he's made Sammy Guevara. He's given people great feuds.
So many people.
Yeah, he's like 48 years old, and this new company that said they're going to be different and build new stars put the title on a 48-year-old, and it was perfect.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Jericho has been a phenomenal person, a phenomenal cornerstone in all of wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. They just put him out, give him a micro, and send him out, and he makes something happen. And yeah, he's done it for Jungle Boy. He did it for Darby Allin. He did it for Scorpio Sky. Seems easy to him. It's brilliant.
Who is the next person for Jericho to have these individual Elevate the Stars tour match?
In a different kind of way, it will probably be Moxley. And I think Moxley needs less of that, but I think... He's on his way up, and he'll probably get there regardless. But that's
probably the pay per view match, right? Who's the TV? So? Who's the TV? Jericho? TV.
So far, it's been heel face.
Can I throw at you one name?
Mm-hmm.
Orange Cassidy.
Orange Cassidy. That would be I would love to see how Jericho would interact with Orange Cassidy. That would be fascinating.
I think Trent is also a great choice, but I think, you know, if we're going to go full...
I'm less interested in him. Orange Cassidy would be... That's a great shout. I wouldn't have even thought of putting him in there. It would work for a kind of, he's not going to win, but it's going to be really entertaining.
I think it's a great... If we call back to the Scorpio Sky promo where they almost like tricked Jericho
into a match,
I think this is what they should have done,
yeah.
This will be more Jericho talking to himself, essentially.
Orange Guy gets his sunglasses knocked off, so he takes Jericho's and puts them on. It's simple, but the crowd would go absolutely crazy.
Oh. But just make it a street fight. Then someone's already in jeans. That's perfect. I like, just make it like an I Quit match or something. Like, make it insane. Just like, I just want to see Jericho bubble into a fervor over, like, oh, you think you're so cool? Think you're so smart? Yep. Well, your name's Orange. What, you like orange juice or something? Sure. Well, I think gold is a better color than orange. Nah. Jericho just getting angrier.
Jericho can bounce off anyone, so bouncing off him is good.
Bouncing on himself.
Yeah, the one that I would like would be Rey Fénix, but he might not even need Jericho for that.
Rey Fénix.
The dynamic
is someone that
maybe doesn't work. He's just the guy that I would like elevated.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to look over the roster, and there's really not many other guys. It feels like, I mean, maybe Shima, you know, just do a little bit of that legend versus legend, and Shima's not really been a person that
Luchasaurus, but maybe doesn't need it.
You can maybe argue Dustin. The same thing about Orange Cassidy.
Dustin would be interesting.
Dustin's not bad.
Not exactly a young and up and comer, but.
Mm-hmm. Orange Cassidy, though.
I'm sold on Orange Cassidy, just for the sunglasses spot.
Looking at what it feels, but who knows? Who knows what they have been thinking? Who has been the key member of? We're talking about maybe the lacklusterness of the division as well. Who has been some of the key figures or key members of the women's division? In your opinion?
I really like Hikaru Shida. I think she's great. I'm disappointed that she seems to have been brushed to the side.
Agree. I think it's, you're right. Hikaru Shida is someone that feels like she should be the star, mm-hmm. right?
Her but and it B doesn't. Priestley. I'm assuming they can't get B Priestley over enough, like over to the country enough from Japan, because she is outstanding.
Yet they bring her over for Dark and all these things.
Yeah.
They just bring her over for Dark matches.
Strange.
I feel like, partly, I had the theory about the B Priestley thing, and my theory, I said this on a previous episode, but my theory was that, like, B Priestley probably wasn't meant to be around this often. But with the whole concussion angle, they went with it. They went with the story that was being told. Because it was like the concussion happened, and then we really had the fans made the rivalry happen. That's my theory. That's my grand old theory about that.
Possibly, but that could definitely be.
But to go back to the women's division, it like we said, it's like it's tough that, you know, Riho doesn't necessarily feel maybe like the biggest star, the biggest key member, despite being the champion, being so, I guess you could say, dominant as the champion. It doesn't feel like there's a key person,
but I think she did, or she certainly did to me. I felt like she just kept winning, and she was a good wrestler, and I'm already talking past tense because she's not been there for a long time. I think that's, I don't know, I feel like she was credible as a champion until she disappeared.
I definitely feel like, back to the low light, definitely feel like my situation really, and then also maybe allegedly the apparent transferring of running the women's division.
So who transferred
to my understanding into the belief of many, it was said originally by Brandy that she was the head of the women's division.
Yes.
Then time passes, and then it sort of has come out that Kenny Omega is running the women's division.
Okay. So I thought it was both belief, of them at the start.
But it could have been just my assumption. It could have been. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's all, you know, these are also just in interviews and sort of things. So maybe the wording is bad. But that's, to my knowledge, it's Brandy may have been running it. Kenny may have been like being the coach. I guess you could say. I don't know. I don't know what's happening, but it definitely feels like a shift has happened. We're getting these different wrestlers, you know, Sadie Gibbs, someone that was hyped up, has been not
disappeared.
But also, according to what I saw of her in Dark, the only wrestler that has had her match edited in AEW Dark. So Sadie Gibbs apparently not ready. So I don't know what's happening.
Sorry, her match was edited?
Yeah, back in whatever AEW Dark it was, Sadie Gibbs had, it was a tag match and a fatal four-way match. Sadie Gibbs had two matches and two separate AEW Dark matches. And maybe I can notice it better because I'm like from the film background sort of thing. So whenever I see a poor edit, it annoys the crap out of me. Yeah. But there's moments in the matches where it's like a move is about to happen. We cut to the audience. We cut back. The move is over. The move has happened. The move is passed. Okay. We've moved on to something else.
Right. So yeah. She'd messed up or something.
Presumably. Okay. We're not there live, so who knows? But
yeah, of course. They do to cut to the crowd as well.
Yeah. Why cut to the crowd during the middle of a move? That never happens in wrestling.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. And she's disappeared for a while as well.
Yeah. I guess she's come back with this whole Chris Statlander thing, maybe. Maybe we're getting a tag match. I don't know. Well, so whatever happened to is Brandy and a question for you, and maybe we can talk about this in terms of our rankings as well. Do you feel that Allie and Brandy are still wrestling for AEW, or are they just like managers fully now?
Well, Brandy's only ever had that one match way back against Allie. Was that against Allie? I think it was.
Correct.
On one of those shows, you know, the kind of pay-per-views before it all started. Mm-hmm. Ali, again, kind of been wrestling those kind of matches. She's wrestled six matches, actually, which is, you know, it's quite high up there in terms of the women.
I believe she had a couple matches and then a couple dark matches as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why they've got rid of her. She seemed quite good. Brandy wasn't received well after the match against Ali. I think it was against Ali.
Yes, it was.
And she also appeared in a battle royale, I think.
Yes. Yeah. That whatever that battle royale was.
The cards one, casino battle royale.
Yeah, but I was just wondering, like, is Brandy and now the bunny?
I suppose the answer is not at the moment, but.
Yeah, but I guess I always have those stats at the ready.
Yeah, I would like to see Ali wrestling again. Who knows?
So let's talk improvements for the future. We've talked about a lot of the highlights to lowlights, everything in the middle, sort of the key members of each roster member. What do you think are some improvements that AEW can do in the next year?
Just do a league, do a wrestling league. Stop saying you're doing a league and then like. Relegating somebody without
to go back to hold on real quickly to talk about relegations. I really like the idea of having Dark having a little bit of their own roster to a certain extent, like having your Cutlers, having your, I guess, maybe Janelle.
Nobody would watch it might be the issue. I like the idea, but I don't think people would watch it.
But what if it was, you know, we're talking European football here. Mm-hmm, what if it was like a relegation league where it's if you pick up enough wins, you go up to the main show.
Yeah.
But then if you lose a lot, you get relegated down.
They could do that. Yeah. I don't know if I'd have it on Dark, because I think they're using Dark almost like a training ground. So like Kenny Omega goes and has some good matches. And I think they're just using it to kind of get the reps in, kind of thing. And I quite like it because you see really good matches every now and again, and it's like what you were saying before, it's just a match. I like the relegation idea. You could just have that on the TV program as well.
That's
like Sean Spears wrestling Joey Janela to get promoted, per se.
It's definitely a storyline opportunity.
Yes, it is a storyline, and that, I suppose that's the thing. Like the G1 does it all the time, that you need to win this match to to keep up with the pack, you need to win this match to have any chance of winning the tournament. It's simple stuff, and it's really engaging.
I guess I'm just trying to find ways to care about Brandon Cutler and QT Marshall.
Oh, QT Marshall's great.
That's fair.
floppy rolling dive thing that he did over the rope was
like a weird Sasuke special, kind of.
It was like he was like, I can get over that rope, and just kind of did. He was surprised too.
Yeah, maybe it's just something to figure out. Other improvements. What other improvements that we could do? If you were given, thrown back to, again, hit the books. I'm just going to throw in plugs all over the place. but if you were given the book, if you were given whatever, what would you do? You talk about a league, maybe focusing more on that sports-centric thing. What would you maybe do to do sort of those things? More tournaments, relegation leagues? What are some things that you yourself would probably focus on?
Do you know what? Any of those things, anything that's like organized where the rules are clear and there's like, I don't know, like start dates and end dates, and like the tag tournament was great. You know, it was happening. You win, you go through, you lose, you're out. And those are the stakes. You know, win this match or you get relegated and you won't get a chance next season of earning a championship match. Great. It's a simple story. It doesn't need to be a cult thing, you know.
Or a collective,
what's the other one? Or a butcher and a you know, the letter B, dark crew, whatever, you know, whatever they're supposed to be.
To go along with that idea, or the idea of there being multiple spooky things, which has been talked to all the time.
Yes,
but I do feel like, and maybe I'm biased because I would love the opportunity to do this, but maybe like I do feel like there may need to be a head showrunner, a head writer, if this makes sense.
For coherence.
Coherence, but not just coherence, making sure that I want all these wrestlers to do whatever they want to do, and I think that's important. I think that's what the brand of AEW sort of established itself as, is being wrestler.
Yeah, you need a balance, I suppose, is maybe what you mean. Like, you can't just have everybody doing whatever they want all the time because it affects other people.
You can't have multiple recruitment angles happening at the same time.
Yeah.
You can't have MGF recruiting BBBs. You can't have Dark Order recruitments. Sean Spears recruiting a tag partner. The Collective.
Can't wait till Chris Statlander joins the Dark Order next week.
Yeah, exactly. All hail. but you're having multiple recruitments. Sean Spears finding a tag partner. The Collective trying to get Chris. Yeah. Multiple things. And to me, it feels like unbased in anything, but it's like, it feels like someone had the idea of doing recruitment or this idea, and then like everyone else was like, oh, I can maybe do that too. Or like subconsciously they thought like, this is what I'm going to do with my career.
Like when Ross gets married on Friends and tries to just steal... What is it? Chandler tries to steal the vows, and then Joey's like, "Oh, well, it's fine if he goes first."
I hate to say it, Craig, but I'll take your word for it.
Okay, sorry.
I've never seen Friends.
Oh, geez. Okay.
I don't want to offend anyone. I've never seen Friends.
I'm sure somebody on Twitter will be raging about that.
Hey, talk to me about How I Met Your Mother, and then we have maybe a podcast.
The better version of Friends.
Well, up until the last season.
Up until the last episode, which is the worst ending to anything ever.
God, that was so bad. I remember watching that episode as I was getting ready for my day. And just sitting there being like, this is... I think it was the first time I watched something that was like, oh, this is actually bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, speaking of actually bad, quit it. I want to be pro wrestler and I like the good ideas, But I think it's also okay to have like one central person. I don't think it should be Tony. I don't think it should be Cody, Young Bucks, Kenny, but just hire a person.
You'd think they'd just sit around a table and talk about these things.
But yeah, just have someone that's like a wrestler comes up and says, I want to, Sean Spears comes up and be like, I want to like try to recruit and find a tag partner and be like, and that's too similar to Dark Order, kind of what Dark Order is doing. Let's not do that. Or MJF is sort of stealing the Crossroads. Maybe let's not have QT Marshall do a Crossroads.
Well, yeah, because Chris Jericho, I don't know what it was I was listening to, but he was talking about how Private Party came up to him here at the start and asked them if they should stop using. Apparently, they do like a double spinning elbow, so kind of like a double Judas effect. Mm-hmm. So they went to him and said, should we continue using this? And he was like, oh, great that you came and spoke to me. That's, you know, shows you're respectful, blah, blah, blah. Perhaps it would be better if you didn't do that one for a while. So,
yeah,
I suppose that kind of thing on a bigger level.
Yeah, just I think there needs to be a more centralized focus. And I hopefully, I think that's my improvement for the future note, is that, like, just focus. I think
organization.
Organization. Like, you want to... You want to be pro wrestler. You want to listen to all the fans. Well, understand that. Don't read all the comments. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Don't
focus. Have a direction. You know, there like because there was you know there was the rumor going around that like you know if we're going behind the scenes, there's a rumor going around that AEW had written out like a year's worth of storylines, right?
Okay.
Does it feel like that's the case? I mean,
no, it does not.
I mean, in their defense, a lot of things has happened. You know, Kylie Rae's gone. Yeah. Dark Order didn't originally get over. All these other things.
I believe that for like the men's main event picture, like you could see the Cody thing and
the Jericho thing.
Moxley and Jericho. You could believe it for that. The women's division, I would struggle with that. Even the tag team division. I'm not. Maybe you could. I suppose you could believe it for them too. Maybe.
I would believe it. I would totally believe it. Being like, I mean, I would. I can maybe take the guess that maybe SCU probably weren't supposed to be the original team to win. I think it could have. I think you know, looking back on it, maybe it should have. I'll be honest. Maybe it should have been the Young Bucks.
It wouldn't have. It would probably be more interesting.
You know, to give some more cachet to the Elite. I mean, that's one of my other improvements is build up. You got to build up the Elite a little bit. Jericho is a legend for 30 plus years. He's built up a lot of cachet. He can burn on Darby, Scorpio, and all these other guys. But the Elite is a new audience to the American audience to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You can't have them burn all of it on building up new talent when they haven't earned enough from this new audience.
Yeah, I was very pro Kenny Omega just winning it straight away. I thought he's the huge star, best wrestler in the world. You want to be sports centric, you want to put on great wrestling matches, there's your guy. I suppose Chris Jericho was getting really old and it was their only chance to have him as the champion. Although Omega's not, you know, he's not that young either.
I would argue that, like, if your main audience is, like, quote-unquote returners, Jericho is a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Saying that, Omega has to be the next champion, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a big argument for that. Moxley could possibly do it as well. I think he'd be quite exciting.
True, but then you'll get fans being like, oh, it's just ex-WWE guys. What is this, TNA?
Yes, of course.
What we got to do is put Sean Spears and Jon Moxley together with Brody Lee, with the Revival, the super group.
NWWEO?
Oh my god. That I think that's I don't know if that wraps it up, but I don't know if it should. What are you most excited about for the future moving forward? Obviously, there aren't a lot of things at stake right now. Of course, we have a couple things announced in terms of the January 1st episode and Revolution. But what are some things that you, whether it's rumors, whether it's what you would like to see, what is something that will make you excited moving forward?
I want to see Kenny Omega as the best wrestler in the world again. That's all I want.
That's fair.
Well, that's not all I want, but that would be number one.
that's number one with a bullet, at the very least.
What would be yours? What's number one on your AEW wish list?
Omega, some building up the elite a little bit more. No, I'll take this all back. What am I most excited about going forward is attending All Elite Wrestling Dynamite Live in Atlanta, Georgia, State Farm Arena, February 19th.
Yeah, that works. That works.
Man, and you're excited about them coming to Scotland, is that correct?
Oh yeah, I'm sure Scotland will be next on the list. Big wrestling country.
Big wrestling
here.
Town. Yeah. Edinburgh. Good.
Yes.
Is there a big sort of stadium that you would definitely have in Scotland?
Yeah. It's like the football stadiums. There's a few. Venue wouldn't be a problem. It's just people to go, I suppose.
Yeah. I hope that they do some
real
sort of
cold.
Would they ever do they could do a UK tour?
I think it'll be in London 100% at some point, probably next year.
Oh yeah, what I mean is like a UK
touring
tour. Let's go Ireland. I guess that's not really UK, but Ireland, England, Scotland. I guess Northern Ireland. I should probably say.
Yeah,
probably separate the two.
Yes, people get upset about that.
Yes. Oh god. We're upsetting so many people today. I'll watch Friends, everybody. You know what? I'll watch Friends.
I think it's a bit late for that.
I'm sweating out of fear. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Craig. Where can people find you?
My before mentioned website, prowrestlingmusings.com. It's objectively, I think it's really good. Check it out. Twitter is just at @PWMusings.
I definitely agree with Craig on that one. It's really good. It is a really what Craig has been doing over there has been nothing short of phenomenal, in my opinion. He's constantly putting out new articles, new stat updates. The time it takes that he puts into it is definitely worth the time it takes reading. So definitely check out ProWrestlingMusings.com. Even if it's not just like you're not a big stats person, I think it's, you know, Craig does a great job of analyzing and telling those micro stories. I mean, that's what made me fall in love with it first. So why not check to prowrestlingmusic.com?
Yeah, it's quite visual. It's quite visual. You don't need to read.
Plus, yeah, and everybody loves pictures.
Yes, so pictures.
If you love pictures and some words, maybe, and numbers, I guess. Check out prowrestlingmusings.com or follow on Twitter at @PWMusings. But yes, thank you everybody for listening. You can follow us at Hit the Books Pod on Twitter. You can subscribe to this feed as well to get more stuff in the future. It's a new year's coming up. So of course you can listen to our sister show, brother show, flagship show, Hit the Books Podcast for that realistic fantasy booking content. So if you love our fancy booking ideas of a super group of ex-WWE guys. We do, I guess, similar, but maybe better. You only one way to find out, and that's by listening to Hit the Books Podcast. Also, in the new year, my co-host there, Mikey Manfredi, will be watching, over the course of 2020, 500 independent wrestling matches, so you can make your recommendations known to him by tweeting hashtag HTB500, as long as it's not WWE, New Japan, or AEW, mainly because he already watches it. But you can make those independent wrestling matches and tweet hashtag HTB500. Again, thank you, Craig, so much for joining us on this episode. I love talking to you every time you're on. And I hope to see everyone around. For Craig, I am Ryan Knightsey. See everyone next week. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.